Welcome, everybody, to Satisfactionist Live. I am your host, Ben Olmos, and it is good to have you all back again this week, week two of Satisfactionist Live, and very happy to have our wonderful guests here today. We have Mr. Andrew Legas. Andrew, how are you?
Doing well, thanks, Ben. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you very much. And we also have Mr. Randy Morrell. Randy, how are you?
Hey, doing well, Ben. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So today we are going to be talking about, this pay gap that is often talked about. And, we talk about, kind of CEO pay and the disparity in CEO pay, how the there's this kind of growing gap between the rich and the poor. And at this time in our economy, which is just going bonkers, we've got a lot of folks who want to work, who can't work, would love to get back to work. Folks who are working, but working for less than they were getting before. And then others who haven't been affected by some of this as nearly as much as some others. And then another segment of the population that has actually benefited from all this craziness has gone on and has really, I guess the old adage of the rich getting richer. And so as we kind of get into this topic today, what we want to really kind of explore is what can be expected as we move forward. If you're just graduating college, and we had many folks who did that, they walked, they went through their ceremony online, if at all, and they're out there in this world, in this economy where everything's just kind of locked right now. We have a lot of folks who are working at companies that haven't been back to work in months or kind of moving out from where they used to be. So lots and lots and lots of stuff going on, and expectations set early in the year and now just kind of in limbo. So let's go ahead and get into that. So Andrew, you have a little bit of experience, if you will, in this economy, and you kind of deal in something that's really interesting, which is the Internet of Things currently in the products and services that you sell. So how has the retail landscape been affected, and what have you seen in your own business?
Sure. Well, I've seen a huge transition in brick and mortar retail converting to e-commerce. So the grocery stores of the world are placing a significant focus on e-commerce. Customers don't want to touch anything, don't want to see anybody. They want to be catered to with as few touch points as possible. So the brick and mortar that is surviving, predominantly grocery, is putting a heavy focus on online ordering.
So it would, which is kind of a direct disruption to what you do, right? what's interesting is, so coming from the wine industry, shameless plug right here for Poliziano Vino Nobile. We're going to talk about that in a little bit before we wrap. But the part of the business that I work in the wine industry, we do a lot with like shelf talkers and neck ringers around bottles and things of that nature. But one of the challenges that we have in this industry right now is that, people are not lingering in the store. They're kind of getting in and getting out. And, it's been quite a challenge in the wine industry to bring people into the store and get people to shop. How have you seen any, call an increase in people wanting devices that help, call to action or anything like that?
Yeah, so in my industry, which is electronic shelf labels, we're seeing a switch where instead of people printing a big 3x5 index card with wine ratings and pairings and everything on it for each particular bottle of wine that they're highlighting, they'll embed a QR code directly on our electronic shelf tag that a consumer can scan, and then it links to their website with information on, you know, which New York strip they should be purchasing with that wine, or you know, how many points a wine enthusiast magazine rated that wine. So you're actually able to have less material in the store that could potentially pass along virus and fewer touch points in the store to still get the same information that you did pre-COVID.
That's awesome. So Randy, how are things, because I know that you also have a background in CPG, also do stuff in the HR world. So you've got a really interesting balance because you get a little bit of exposure to two different things, kind of the consumer side, but then also the employee side. How are things working in your industry as it relates to well, let me start with first the consumer side. What are you seeing on your end of things?
Yeah, well currently I'm in the trucking industry, mainly fuel. So we're seeing, you know, direct interaction with the COVID numbers, with any type of, you know, restrictions placed on our governor from day one, March 17th. We saw, you know, 50% drop in demand for the fuels and stations, 200 stations across California, and it's absolutely devastating. But you know, we also see it's very dynamic when, you know, Governor Newsom lets off some of the restrictions, and it goes back up. But with an HR perspective, luckily we got one of the PPP loans, so we're able to still subsidize our employees, even though they're technically furloughed. We're actually able to give them 40 hours pay per pay period, which is, you know, been critical because we're trying to, for long-term benefit of the company, you know, we want to be long-sighted. We don't want to be short-sighted, because if we lost those drivers to other companies, once the demand came back up, we'd really be hampered.
Well, and that's actually one of the things that I recall even before we got into the situation where we're at now is in the trucking industry, there was already a challenge finding drivers, or at least retaining drivers, just because the economy was doing so well. And, you know, people were, you know, I don't know, maybe driving Uber or Lyft over a truck. Although I think it's probably, you know, more lucrative driving a truck.
Yeah, definitely. We've been in competition with Amazon, with Walmart right now, where, you know, and unfortunately, we need a hazmat certification for delivering fuel. And, you know, drivers are getting paid more by the big box retailers. They're able to go home at night. They're not working demanding shifts. If a station's out, you know, we have to deliver to a station. They're open 24/7. So we're, like I said, we're competing with those guys. And unfortunately, they have the power, especially now with Amazon, with the incredible increase in revenue they've had, you know, since this all started. They have the ability to steal some of the drivers away from us. And that's been critical, like I said, with that PPP, to try to give them that promise that once demand goes back up, they're going to have the hours, because our drivers really rely on overtime hours to make the wage livable in California.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, and that's probably something not a lot of folks really think about. Not only does California have a tremendous amount, I'm sure, of regulation in the trucking industry, you know, it's such a contrast between, you know, here in the South, and I'm not an expert in that industry, but I can tell you that living in California, one of the things, this is a very small thing, one of the things you'll see in California is you barely see a truck driver not obeying the rules of the road. They don't really speed. They you know, keep their distance, you know, for the most part. Very good drivers out there. You come out here to the South, just this afternoon I was doing 65 on a side road, and I had a 18 wheeler pulling away from me in a 55.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And that was a 2-lane road. So it's incredible, just you know, kind of that contrast, that difference. But anyways, getting back to what we were talking about here. So let me ask you this. So when you guys, in your respective fields in your and industry, one of the things that we think about with young people coming into the workforce, you know, how what do you think the proper level of expectation should be for someone coming in today, you know, trying to carve out their piece in an organization? Obviously, you know, the landscape has changed quite a bit. So, are you all seeing a slowdown in, you know, hiring in your respective industries? Obviously we were mentioning, Randy, that you have folks furloughed. So, but are outside of the drivers, are there any, you know, warehouse workers? Because there are some industries, Amazon, that continue to grow and are continuing to thrive.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the youth that are coming out of colleges with their degrees might have to be, you know, pretty open-minded to the first couple of jobs that they take, especially now. It's not necessarily going to be in your field, which is, you know, typically always the case, but even more so now. It's just, I mean, the key is just to be nimble, just to be open-minded, just, you know, just broaden your skill set as much as possible. Don't just rely on the skill set you learned in your degree. And I would say even more important, especially now, is just networking and really keeping, you know, options open for a recruiter. That, I mean, there's so many jobs nowadays that never hit Indeed, never hit the open market, that are just kind of, you know, who you know. That old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Just really network yourself as much as possible. Get your face out there and you know, have your network try to help you as much as you can.
Andrew, what about you? What are you seeing on your end?
Yeah, so our company had to take pay cuts across the board. Even our CEO took a substantial pay cut, which actually impressed all of us that he was willing to do that. But building off of what Randy said about being nimble, what I am seeing in, not in my industry, but locally here in Northern California, home renovations are off the charts. I'm seeing contractors at houses in every neighborhood. People have been stuck at home for 6 months. They're tired of looking at that ugly lawn or, you know, that house paint color that they've been tired of for a decade. They're finally changing. If you're willing to be nimble and even after you got your college degree, willing to work a trade, I think there are substantial opportunities out there to, you know, broaden your horizons, to learn to be an electrician, to, you know, paint houses. Anything home renovation in Northern California is definitely booming.
That's good. And if you're going to go that home renovation route, make sure that, you know, you're doing all of your proper paperwork, if you will. You know, there's a lot of labor to be had, and you know, you bring up a really good point though. When we think about trade labor, the trade industries are still, I mean, there's a housing boom that is going on. To your point, there's a renovation boom that is going on. I was reading about how auto dealers, the challenge that they have right now is that so many auto dealers are not able to get their hands on new car inventory as they would like, because there's been kind of this overall downturn in production as a result of COVID, because you think of all the supply chains that go into building a car and the reduction of raw materials and resources and, you know, finished goods that go into building that car that are, you know, slow to come to the factory. And so there's been a new car slowdown. So auto dealers are buying up used car inventory and paying above, you know, kind of market value for those cars because they can sell them. And, you know, to that point, though, I mean, we still have so many other types of work that can be done out there that, you know, it's not an office job, but, you know, the work involved, the labor involved, it's, you know, you get paid very well, but it is more physical labor. Out of curiosity, so guys, what probably didn't expect this as a question, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. What are some of the things that you guys did prior to getting to doing what you do today?
In terms of the workforce, you mean?
Yeah. What kind of jobs built your skills to what you do today?
I think Andrew and I could both attest that maybe bartending scales up a little bit with the interpersonal communications to learn the people interactions. For me, I just pretty much went straight from college into accounting into that aspect and HR, which, you know, when I first started was very much numbers based. There wasn't as much of an emotional intelligence aspect to it back in the day. Not as many buzzwords, and now it's definitely become managing people, managing emotions, expectations, and a lot more communication than just pushing paper in the past.
And you get a lot of exposure working in the restaurant industry. So you're mentioning before that you worked in bars. You learn great people skills working with people at a customer service level. I have to say, I mean, like I've had so many jobs leading up to what I got into doing professionally, but some of it was restaurant work, working in gas stations, working, warehouses, pizza delivery, all kinds of different things. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing. I'm of the belief that everybody should spend some time in the service industry serving other people and kind of being told what to do, because you really lose a lot of, I don't want to say pride, that's probably not the right word, but you lose a lot of that that ego, if you will.
Ego.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So Andrew, what other things have you done to kind of build your background and build up your resume?
Sure. So I've been in sales in a number of different industries since graduating college, but prior to university, I worked in a grocery store for a total of 5 years, and I did do some residential construction. So similar to what I mentioned earlier, I had no training whatsoever, and I was able to work not even as an apprentice, more as a laborer, under a general contractor. So I've run the gambit with my career, definitely.
All right, so I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, because we got a comment here from Adolfo. I'm going to go ahead and put it up here on the screen, although it's not. There we go. Position that a little bit, a little on the fly editing. But Adolfo was saying that all of their jobs that they have or have gotten came from mutual acquaintances. So knowing people, which is, that's a big part. Randy, one of the things you said, it's not who you know it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? Yeah. And the reason I got a little mixed up there is because one of the things I always say is it's not so much who you know, it's who knows you. More people who know what you do, how you do, the reputation you build, the people who know the kind of work that they can expect from you, that kind of stuff spreads. But one of the things that I often see folks coming into the workplace is, they kind of demand respect right off the bat. And I'm of a different generation. I mean, respect is not one of those things that just anoints you. You get anointed with the moment you walk through the door. You have to build it and you have to earn it. And I was just teaching a class earlier this evening, and one of the things I told my students is, look, if the president of the United States, whether the current administration or the administration before, but if the president of the United States can't get respect from a group of people, what the heck makes you think that because you have a college degree, you're going to get respect? I mean, you really have to kind of build that reputation. Do you find either of you in the work that you do in the up and coming leadership generation, do you find any sort of disparity between what they have versus what they want or feel they deserve?
Yeah, just to go back for one moment real quick, Ben, to what you were saying also, I've actually had experience where I've gotten a resume for an applicant and saw that her most recent employer was actually the employer where my best friend worked. And before I even, you know, brought her in, I just called the best friend, asked what she thought, and her response was awesome, awesome, awesome. Three words that she said, and that person was hired before she even came into the interview. She just didn't know about it. So, you know, it was just more of an introduction more than anything. And at the end of her interview, I told her I called her coworker and you know, got the 411 on her and worked out. So that's a good example of, like you said, it's who knows you. But I think for the most part, the people that come in, they're not expecting anything per se, but I think that it's just maybe a little young naivety where you think you know more than you actually do. You think that what you learned in college is, you know, what's out on the street and what's going to get you successful. It just has to do with being open-minded. I learned more about accounting my first year outside of college than 4 years plus in it. So it's that desire to be open-minded, desire to learn and to, you know, put more tools in your toolbox and become a more rounded employee and you know, not expect that you know what's going to happen, but just ask questions. Ask why do you do that? It's one of my favorite questions to ask, because it's not, you know, it's not in your face. It's not accusatory. I just, if I'm confused about something, I'll just say, tell me why you do that. And that's an important, you know, thing to learn about, you know, the job, but also the person that's doing the job.
No, that's a very good point. I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, there's a pathway to building up to where you're at. And one of the things that I have talked about a lot, especially to, you know, when I teach students in the undergrad world, one of the things that I talk about a lot is, you know, you're not, when you start out, you're not going to have that network. Building a network within an industry takes time. You know, I was in the soda business for 20 years and, you know, I come into the wine world and one of the things that I notice is that there are so many people in the wine industry that know each other from one place or another. And I find that when you're kind of in a small, tight industry, you know, those relationships are so valuable because if you damage them, you know, to the point that you were saying, Randy, I mean, it gets around, you know, intentionally or not, is people naturally kind of move from one place to another. And, you know, you either get the, oh yeah, I used to work with them. They were great. Or, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Andrew, give me a little, insight as to what it tends to be like, you know, well, let me ask you this, because you're kind of in one of these industries that is evolving. Internet of Things is one of those kind of buzzwords, and it means a lot of things to a lot of different industries, but it, specifically into the retail and CPG industry, what it means is this kind of interconnectedness, and you're building and innovating technologies and doing things that are a little bit new and broad. If you're brand new, if you're coming out of college, what would you say are some of the things that you should get exposed to kind of migrate into that field or that industry that you work in today?
Yeah, so, you know, I've seen people coming right out of college in my industry who are on kind of all ends of the spectrum. I'll use one example. There's a gentleman on my team who was 5 when 9/11 happened. So, you know, he's definitely on the younger end, and he's had to be resilient because his entire memory is based on the chaos that we've all experienced over the last 20 years. So being nimble, being flexible, and exposing yourself to people of all different backgrounds and age groups is definitely beneficial in my industry. So I sell predominantly in grocery, and you have to be able to keep the 85-year-old client happy with your technology, but you also have to be able to attract the millennials and centennials using your technology. So you have to be nimble. You have to be able to speak to multi-generational consumers. And I think being able to expose yourself to all different kinds of people right out of college is going to help you in that type of industry.
Good information. I think one of the things that we're probably seeing a lot today are younger folks. Let's take away the ones that have graduated or are near graduation, but we have some younger folks who are really starting to question, do I need a higher education? Do I need to go to college? Because I can learn so many things on the internet, or I can watch YouTube videos, or I can study. You look at a software application like Salesforce. You can go to Trailhead and learn all you can about Salesforce for free. You can watch, YouTube videos and learn how to code and learn R. And I mean, there's so many different free resources out there. Are you all getting any sort of indications with the folks that you're working at that there is some sort of doubt as to whether or not they should go to college or go back to school or go back into some sort of higher education realm to advance their opportunities and what they're doing in your respective industries?
Go ahead, Randy.
I was going to say I think overall it's been the last 10 years, COVID aside, it seems like, the college degree is just 4 years of college, and then you're paying back your student loans to your 20s, and you're not working in the field that you actually have your degree in. So it's there's been a little disassociation between the education you do and the job you end up obtaining down the road. So I think just lately it's just been exacerbated where, you used to be able to get a degree from a higher learning college and then pretty much just fall into a job that you're going to keep for 10, 15 years, a steady income, and have some stability. And now that's just not the case. Everyone's just going from job to job. And before, I feel like employers used to have a mindset that the employees were assets. I don't really think that's as much the case anymore. That's a little more expendable, and I think the employees see that, and they're kind of reacting accordingly and kind of taking their own route.
Yeah, I have to say, Randy, that is actually one of my these like little things that I hear sometimes, and I always get a little shiver. Employees are our asset, our most valuable asset. Well, isn't an asset something that you can sell? Are employees really assets? I don't like to, one of those things that I'm like, I don't know about employees being assets. I also don't like the term employees are family either, though. Because, we don't throw our family out on the street when we're short of money. But companies do that all the time. So I don't know that we're necessarily family or assets. Because if we were that valuable, why would we be thrown out?
Family and assets both imply some level of ownership. So, think on that.
This is true. One thing I'm going to, we're getting down to the wire here, but one thing that I wanted to put up on the screen here. So one of the things that I was talking about I was talking to Andrew about this a little while ago, but there's this wonderful index out there called the Wilshire 5000 to GDP. It's basically a measure of market cap in the United States against the value of stock, a company value, market cap of companies. So we look at the market cap of company, and the gross domestic product for the United States. And one of the things that's very interesting about this graph that we've got up here is you'll see the year 2000, we were indexing at about 1.4. So, the value, the market cap of our industries were at about 40% higher than our GDP. And we had a crash or a correction, as they call it. And then we crept up again in 2007. And then, of course, we had, the housing bubble burst. And that was another thing. And I've been watching this, and as you can see, 2015, we're getting back up to, about parity, 1%, almost even. And today, we are at, let's see, 1.78% of market cap to GDP. All of this screams we should probably be very cautious, because what it looks like is we have a huge valuation in stock and in the belief that there's going to be this wonderful profitable tomorrow, but it is way outpaced the amount of productivity that we have. Now, this could be a little bit COVID related, but honestly, it's been creeping up for a little bit. It's spiked tremendously lately. As you guys kind of see that and think about it, what are your thoughts? What any particular insights that you have on that, or thoughts that cross your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no financial planner, but it definitely does alarm me a little bit. A lot of the growth in the S&P in, you know, the previous 12 months has been in the technology sector. So net of technology, it's not quite as healthy as some might think. So I think there's a lot of over speculation going on, and, you know, it would be smart to be cautious at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that overall, this is one of those things where, you know, we keep touting the value of the market. Apple is over $2 trillion in market cap these days, tremendously valuable company. But at some point, are we going to be able to keep up with that pace? I don't know. One of the things I would love to do is grab an economist or somebody who really knows this index well. Would be great to talk to them. If we have somebody out there like that, please let me know. I would love to bring them on the show and drill down into this, because it's just very fascinating and also very scary. Well, guys, one of the things that I like to do at the end of these shows, I'm starting to like to do at the end of these shows, is kind of showcase what we're drinking. And I do encourage you guys to have a drink, a beverage of your choice. What I have chosen this evening is a Poliziano Vino Nobile. This is a 2016. I actually had this earlier, not today. It was actually just like a day or two ago, with a really nice New York strip. And it went fantastic. Poliziano is just amazing. The Vino Nobile di Monte Pulciano, fantastic wine. Andrew, what are you drinking, sir?
Yeah, so I have a lovely Northeast-style hazy IPA from Revision. This isn't quite a local beer for Northern California. I call it local adjacent, from the Reno area in Sparks, Nevada. So if you ever see anything from Revision at the store, definitely check them out. They make a nice beer.
Nice. Well, you're only like, what, 3 hours from there?
3 hours. Yeah.
So, very good. All right, Randy, you have anything exciting to share?
Yeah, I got a little CBS stout from Founders Brewery in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Nice.
Founders, you see Founders anywhere, go ahead and grab it, because all their stuff they make is really fantastic.
Awesome. So we got beers, and I of course, biased and went with wine. Well, gentlemen, thank you both for your time and hanging out, having a little chat about this stuff. I really appreciate you guys doing that. So just to let folks know, though, coming up this Thursday, we have another wonderful conversation. We're going to be talking with Lisa Faye and Danielle Jinks. And we're going to be talking about personal brand. And so, you know, today we were talking a lot about, companies and where they're at, some of the challenges with pay and jobs and things like that. But a big part of getting that next job, or just, knocking it out of the ballpark with where you're at, is building and cultivating your personal brand. And so these two ladies that we're going to have on Thursday are just absolutely phenomenal. I love talking to them. Been friends for quite a while, and they have a lot to contribute and say about this. So I hope that you will all join us back on Thursday, 11 p.m., 8 p.m. Pacific. Till then, thanks very much for checking this out. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you back next time. Have a good one.